For my whole career, I've used D'Addario strings.
This is the one that I use live with Megadeth, and I love it.
I've been with D'Addario my whole career, even when I was playing bass in Van Halen. D'Addario for life. And I say it right, D'Addario.
Say tone is in the hands, so use those hands to smash the like and subscribe button, and your tone will improve as you watch these rig rundowns.
I can hear it now.
What a pinch harmonic.
Awesome.
Hi.
Hey.
Hi there.
How you just doing, Brendan?
I'm good. How you doing?
Real
Thanks for
good.
Coming.
Chris Keys, we're with the man himself behind Death Clock, Metalocalypse. We're in Boston. MGM Music Hall near Fenway. How you doing, sir?
I'm good. I went to music school not too far from here.
Oh, that's right.
Like just right over there at Berklee College of Music. We're on Lansdowne Street. This is where I would underage drink. It's great to be back home.
Great memories.
Yeah, good memories. Oh, what a time.
If they could be remembered, you know, there's probably some fuzzies.
I can remember some of this stuff. I remember my first inversion chords after all of that, so that's good. I had a great time at Berklee College of Music. I'm like one of those guys that stayed there the whole time.
Yeah, you didn't drop out.
Yeah, Chick Corea handed me my diploma.
Wow.
Which was empty because I still have some credits I need to go take care of, I think. So.
Or pay off the tuition.
Pay off the tuition. I got some payments to make and I have some things to learn still. But then I went directly into retail right afterwards. And now here I am.
Selling riffs and
selling
guitars. But man, I gotta start from the beginning. 20 years of Metalocalypse and Death Clock. What's that mean to you? Considering the run
is missing. What does it mean to me? I don't know. It means that I guess we've all survived. And this is a crazy project that to me is, you know, it goes, you know, I describe it like a weed in a city block, like in the cement. Just keeps on kind of growing. And nobody's watering it.
Yeah.
But for some reason, it keeps being alive. And I think it's because this is the only thing like this out there.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, there's no other show that gets to kind of have fun with music. I mean, seriously, I've created the ultimate job for myself where I get to make jokes and I get to do sweep arpeggios. So who else gets to do that?
It's job security.
It is. It really is job security. I made sure I couldn't get fired because I'm the only one. Because I do most of the voices.
Yep.
I would write the show.
Yeah.
Of course, I had a huge animated team of animators, compositors, editors, other actors, great actors, great, you know, guest voice actors. But I always like to make sure I can't get fired from a job. You can't replace me with somebody else.
It's insulation at its best.
Exactly. So being able to do... the music and be able to do the writing was really important for me because that's what I wanted to do for a living, you know?
Now, I haven't been able to see the show. We'll see it tonight. But I'm sure there's some new animations that you're being able to create and stuff since, you know, obviously the movie that came out a few years ago and the run of the show has been over for a while. But I'm sure you still get to scratch that itch. Be doing the animation and writing skits for the interplays between the songs and stuff?
I think it's kind of necessary to keep the relationship fresh, you know, to bring something new to the table. And so, we like to make some new comedy. and to maybe shine a light on some songs that we've never kind of shown a light on before.
Oh, all right.
And so we get to dip into our oeuvre and kind of like shake something loose, and that's what we do with our live show. And our live show is very, if you haven't seen it, I'll describe it to you. It's we played a picture. So what you can't really see is there's a gigantic movie theater screen that we bring into every single venue, and we play in lockstep with the picture so that every downbeat is coinciding with a cut, and you get this really interesting synergy between the band, the live band on stage, and the picture. And we are basically shadows because none of us look like Deathclock, but as it turns out, we sound exactly like them. Yeah, exactly like them.
Yeah.
So I don't need, so when I'm up here doing a voice, I don't need people thinking about me or doing anything in relation to me. They look beyond me.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost like you're going to the ballet, and there's a ballet, and then there's a pit orchestra. We have the pit orchestra, but the ballet is really that gigantic screen. Mm-hmm. So Gene Hoagland, our drummer, is kind of our conductor of our pit orchestra. We all have in-ears on. We're listening to click tracks.
Okay.
And our editing is almost like drum programming to a degree, where the our editors have to be very musical, and they have to understand where our snares are, where our kicks are, where the drum fills are. They have to be able to find, because they're in like, you know, two frame pops of what one of Gene's double kicks are. So we kind of program all that stuff in, and we get this really great synergy between picture and live band. And if Gene's in time, we're in time. And with heavy metal, you're either dead on or you're dead off.
Yeah.
And we want to be just like to be able to stop on a dime. And it feels like at the end of the whole experience, it feels like a bit of a magic trick that we're doing.
Yeah.
And it's me and Neely Brosh and Pete Griffin and Gene Hoagland. And we cover a lot of ground with those four people.
Yeah. What's it been with bringing Neely into the fold? I know she's been on a few tours now.
Neely. Well, first of all, she can do anything on guitar. So she's like part Squiscar, part Toki, to my part Squiscar, part Toki, part Nathan.
Yeah.
There are some really fun duels that we do on the live shows. She gets featured a lot. And she's just like, it's a lot of material and she handles it incredibly well. And she is just a clean player and she's got her shit together.
Yes.
She's really good, yeah. She also went to Berklee College of Music. And so we can all kind of speak in the same terms and stuff, you know?
Yeah. What's it like to get going back to kind of the production side of it?
Yeah.
To get ready for that, like you said, working with the editors, what's the time frame on getting that this production ready to go for tour?
It's a good question because this is not like a normal band where you throw it on a set list at the night and you go, hey, let's cross out this song, let's replace it with this song. We'd love to do that kind of stuff, but in order for us to get started, let's say maybe 6 months ago, Gene Hoagland and I start talking, and we go, hey, let's talk about this new set list. Let's talk about, I've got some pitches. I want to hear what you have to say. What do we think are songs that are necessary for the set? What are some fun twists and turns, some fun new shiny things that we can throw in there between comedy and songs? And so we plot this around 6 months before the tour. And then this year, basically, to keep costs low, I work very slowly with a small team of compositors, a guy named Brian Weeder, an editor named Brian Reese, who helped me out a lot, and then different animators too. Mm. So I kind of like, I have access to the archives of all of our animations. So that's like everything right there. Just, you know, years and years of animation, of characters, of backgrounds, of all that stuff. So we start putting together what these little stories are, and we make sure that they work with the music really well. And I'm working up until basically the day of rehearsal. And then, so I'm exhausted already before we get there because I've been going, come on guys, come on, finish the work. We're gonna make it, there's not gonna be anything on screen. We're gonna be in big trouble. So a lot of that. And then we go right into rehearsals and we have our whole timeline locked. We look for like, we scan it for any problems or anything. And then we export everything. We go on the road from rehearsal. And then I've been here ever since. So this part's the vacation for me as far as I'm concerned. Everything else is like a job. This part is like, this is the most fun I can have.
Yeah.
Being able to kind of take on all these roles.
I have I don't mean this in like a negative way, but I'll try to phrase it in a way that it can do it justice. It's like doing this as a live entity. Obviously, it started as a show, and now you've created the live production over the years and tours. Is it weird for you that's always wanted to be a guitar player? I've heard you use the phrase frustrated guitarist. you wanted to be in the spotlight? Is it weird to be in the shadows, or do you feel fulfilled because you're bringing such a unique experience to the fans and listeners?
The thing that's really fun about this is that I think this show is about, like, I'm in the sweet spot for me, for my personality. Me being a shadow, but also being in the front of the stage makes a lot of sense for who I am.
Okay.
Secondly, they're not applauding for me, and I'm sorry, they're not applauding for us. They're applauding for Death Clock.
Yeah.
So our egos are like at the end, I'm like, good, I'm glad you like those guys. I'll see you next time. It's not really about us. I, in fact, cower when the lights are turned on. I don't want to be seen, really. The way I think about this is that, like I said, we don't look like Death Clock. You shouldn't be thinking about me. You shouldn't be looking at me. My joke is I'm bad for the brand. You shouldn't be thinking about that. You should be listening, and you should be watching that gigantic TV set we bring in there.
Yeah.
So, you know, I got to say, this is this project. I see a lot of people trying to find a way into the industry. My way was creating a TV show and hiring myself as a musician.
Yeah.
And an actor.
Yeah.
Because no one else, who else is going to hire me?
Yeah.
Right? So that's how I do it. And the show got popular. And like I said, people watch it all the time without us doing anything.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of people who discovered heavy metal through this show. So
that's a gateway drug.
It makes sense to me because this show, I thought when making it, was for me when I was discovering heavy music and guitar. And we see now that 20 years later, those kids are grown up, and they're telling me that this is how they discovered heavy metal and guitar.
That's cool.
So it's very cool, yeah.
Well, let's get to the business of it. Guitars. Tell me about what you are using.
Okay, so this is like, this is just an Explorer. Just a regular old Explorer from the early 2000s that I bought. And there's nothing too special. I guess I've changed some things. I think I've had it refretted with some jumbo frets. I've had them dressed nice and flat on top. I've gotten used to this smaller scale guitar, but I tune pretty low.
What are you tuned to?
I'm tuned to C standard.
Okay.
So this is like, but nowadays I just want it to be easy to play.
Mm.
So I'm C standard, and these are 11s, so like 50 on this one, Rob? Do we know? 52. Okay, yeah, 52. So it's a little bit heavier, but not much. And I replaced the original pickups with several things over the years, and right now they're burst buckers because I just think they're pretty transparent.
Yeah.
And, you know, medium to high output, not too much.
I know that you kind of did like a gear cleanse. You had the unfortunate, you know, robbery at the studio, but then you also listed some guitars on Reverb because you acknowledged that I'm not playing them. I want other people to play them.
Yeah, yeah.
So why did you keep this one? What did you enjoy about it?
I think the reason I kept this one is that I like the frets a lot.
Yeah.
Seriously. I'm used to an Explorer at this point. I have a natural place where I rest my hand when I play.
Mm-hmm.
And that's seriously it. I like the frets.
Yeah.
And I like these pickups and this guitar. I think I use this on the first Death Clock record.
Okay.
And I just keep it around because every time I grab it, it feels pretty familiar to me. So that I have this, and then I have this guitar. I mean, my studio was robbed, and I had a bunch of guitars set out that I was going to use for the Death Album 4 record. Of course, they never got used, and there were some pretty unique guitars, and it did make me think, you know, how many guitars do I need? I need one at a time, really.
Yeah.
And it kind of gave me permission to kind of to play the field a little bit, to go see what else is out there, you know? Because life is short, play every guitar you can, right?
Yeah.
I mean, do I need to just be playing this guitar all the time? Not necessarily. At home, I'm playing lots of different guitars. In fact, here's one. This is the, I can show you this one. This is pretty cool. This is the Jason Richardson Ernie Ball. And I had a custom paint job with like just matte black and white pickups. Sometimes it helps. By the way, we play in the dark. You know, there's a little bit of ambient light behind us. And in fact, we rehearse in the dark. You'll see, I have on my microphone stand, I have two little reading lights. So, and they're aimed like right around like where the 14th to like to my pickups are.
In.
So I can see, once you get past like the 12th fret, it's hard to know what you're doing on guitar. And mostly when I'm looking down, I just see the high E string. So I'm kind of flying dark. So I have to like
solo, you're blind, I mean.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So, So this one has lumen lay put in on the side so I can kind of see where I am. And again, these are guitar, and the white pickups help me to see where, and I have a white pick so I can kind of see where I'm aiming properly. This is a show about perpetual motion on the right hand. I'm just like constantly going. So I have a nice light pick, and I have white pickups here that I can see. Beyond that, this is a longer scale, right? This is 25.5. And I love the way this guitar feels and is set up. And these are completely different pickups. These are like the Ernie Ball pickups that come with this one. It's got like a, I guess, an extra gain stage in here. And
do you use that ever?
I don't really. I mean, at home, maybe I'll turn it on if my signal is a little weaker. I can kind of get a little bit more gain out of it for legato stuff. But not really. I keep it pretty much like there, and the neck pickup sounds great. These guitars are, you know, made in the USA, and they're really, really solid as hell. So they built this one for me.
Yeah.
And that was after, you know, we were on a baby metal tour with Jason Richardson, and I was like, let me see what you're playing. How are you so good? It's ridiculous. So this is a cool one. I also got an Abbasi guitar.
Oh, yeah.
So I have a Larada at home that I absolutely love too. So
an eight string, right?
That one's a six string, because okay. I was like, but I have like a Strandberg eight string too.
That's right.
So I have a couple of Strandbergs. I have these. I have some Nick Johnston Strats.
Oh, you know? From Schecter.
Yeah, from Schecter. And some Ibanez guitars. You know, I've got everything in my studio. So
what do you dig about the eight string, getting to spend time with that?
I dig that it's that I can still be confused so easily by two extra strings.
Yeah.
I really dig the, I like the playability of the Strandbergs. I love that I can sit and play them easily and reach everything and all the ergonomics involved. It's also got, you know, it's got a fatter tone than you'd ever expect it to have. And the eighth string's really sharp and punches through really nicely. But yeah, I'm just experimenting. I'm experimenting with like going down low.
You're dating. And,
yeah, basically, yeah. I'm playing the field. Why not?
Now, I want to bring it up because you said right hand perpetual motion.
Yeah.
And Jason Richardson, which happens to be your guitar teacher.
That's right. I took a lesson, yeah.
So can you tell the audience at home what that experience was like and kind of why you
went there? Like, you know, I do a lot of stuff for a living. And so guitar is something that, like, you know, it's over the years I've learned it and unlearned it and relearned it several times over. And something happened, like, where I was just gripping too much, or my guitar was too low. I had to take a look at my posture. So Jason gives lessons. So I said, whatever your rate is, I'll pay it. But consider this like a golf pro. Watch my swing and tell me where I'm fucking up. Oh, would you?
Yeah.
And so he did. And he's like, no, I see what you're doing with your right hand. And I see, like, you know, and I kind of, like, for the last year, it really was super helpful, because even if you're playing just a little too low and you're playing on the sides of your fingers as opposed to just on the tips of your fingers like that, you know,
yeah,
it makes a huge difference of having control over the guitar, you know, and vibrato and attack and getting in the right spot. So all that stuff, just making sure that, like, no nerve damage will happen by just being right on top of the guitar. Mm-hmm. So keeping my guitar a little bit higher, and that's the left hand. And then the right hand is just, you know, staying relaxed, staying light, you know.
Huh.
As light as I can possibly be, especially with all this heavy stuff. I mean, I hear people, it sounds like they're playing really hard, but you can get that same attack by playing very, very light. Also, this pick, this is like, I was at the NAMM convention, and this is a Tortex, just a simple Sharpie Tortex, right? 0.73, I think.
Yeah.
I picked up Paul Gilbert's pick at the Ernie Ball booth. He had just played, and I was like, oh, I got it. Because every once in a while, I'll find a pick on the floor at like one of these things, and I'll go, let me try that out. Let me just see what happens. And it changes something every once in a while.
Yeah.
Because I'll play jazz threes, I'll play flow picks, I'll play Altexes. I've been playing those for a long time. Altex, like 1.14s. But this one, for some reason, this Tortex, it forces me to play a little bit lighter.
Hmm.
I just feel like it does. Like it, or it makes me want to. It's like, these are all Dumbo's magic feathers, right? And it's something that in our mind we need to, so that we can play well. You know, some kind of magic trick or something.
Yeah.
And switching up your pick is a really fun thing. And I remember Brian Kehoe at Dunlop sent me a bunch of picks, and he goes, if you ever want to mess with your tone, here's a great way to do it. And I remember him, like, 15 years ago. It's a lot cheaper. And it also really, like, it will change your attack, you know, from an Altex to a Tortex to a flow, to a nylon, to whatever it is. That will really change your attack.
Yeah.
And playing a little bit lighter, playing with a lighter pick, right now, it could change next week, by the way, is working for me, and having a wider pick just to kind of like keep my grip loose and have a little bit more surface area just to hang on to. So hopefully at my best when I'm playing it at night, you could walk up and pick the pick out of my hand and just take it away if you wanted to, because I'm not gripping too tight. But when I'm gripping too tight, it's a mess. Everything's
choking.
A mess.
Yeah,
because, you know, tension is the enemy of guitar playing, especially when you're playing shit like this. It's like there's a lot of notes
you're playing.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. And that's also why I'm here, because I like this challenge. It's fun. It's fun to have a counterpoint between vocal and guitar, you know, and then have some pretty challenging guitar parts along the way. So if this got too easy, I wouldn't be here. As long as it's a challenge, I'm very interested.
Yeah. Well, before we get into kind of the brains of the tone here, I do want to give a shout out to other guitars. We can show those in the B-roll section, but we got a couple Death Clock guitars, right? You kind of in the
wings? Oh, yeah. So I have some backup. I've been keeping this one because it's been working, and if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah.
And I also need 24 frets for this other, for one piece, right? And so I have another 24 fret guitar, which is my Ghost Horse, which is basically, you know, this, 24/7/5 scale, which is, you know, the Gibson scale. And I'll use that too. I really like the way that guitar turned out.
That's got a Floyd too, right?
And it's got a Floyd.
Yeah.
So again, when I'm working with Epiphone, I say, what's not on the market that I wish was on the market? And 24 frets on an Explorer with a Floyd is something I don't see on the market currently. So they put that out, and it did really well for those reasons, right? Because you can't find those guitars, really. And then the other guitar is my Thunder Horse, which is basically, you know, an Explorer.
Yeah.
With a cool silver burst.
Do you ever miss bringing out the Vs? I know you had the all white Vs that you
I had. Have those Vs, but I mean, at some point, if I'm really looking ahead and I'm thinking I'm probably gonna play one guitar and a little bit of another one, I could bring my collection, and then Rob would have to tote it around everywhere and go like, God, and at some point he'd be going, what am I doing taking these guitars and then moving them over there and then moving them over there all around the United States of America?
Just keeping Rob busy.
Yeah, what am I doing? Just trying to torture poor Rob? What did he ever do to deserve this?
I'm sorry, Rob.
Yeah, anyway.
Well, yeah. Talk to me about the Neural here and how you have that programmed for the sounds that you need.
First of all, okay, yeah, absolutely. So first of all, I was introduced to Neural during the pandemic. I tried the Nameless Suite, the Meshuggah amp, and I was really impressed where that was the most amp-like thing I had ever tried, you know? Just the fact that it pushed and pulled with you, and I could feel that compression, and I felt like tubes for the first time. So I was very interested in the Nameless. Then I heard that this was coming out, and I started getting very excited because I was already a fan. And then I got the Plinny, the plug-in.
Oh, yeah.
That one to me was amazing. All those reverbs and delays being very musical and everything are really cool. And so I thought, I bet I could use this for a live thing. So I got this thing and I sat with Neural and screen shared with Max Taylor Grant, who's, you know, one of their artist relations and development guys, super smart dude, super nice. And I asked him, can I do something in one scene that's my whole show? And he said, absolutely. And he walked me through it. So I don't remember how I programmed this thing. But
so you just have it kind of set up, just your key sounds.
Exactly. This whole show's about simplicity. We've got a lot of stuff going on. How simple can I keep my rig? How simple can I keep the show, the edit? I mean, seriously, when we think about what the actual visual is, we have a stereo track running to front of house. One side goes to front of house. We have some like dialogue for the comedy parts. We have some synthesizer stuff, you know, and then we have a click track on the other side, and that click track is sent to us, so it's a stereo track. Couldn't be more simple. We're not splitting with 16 tracks, sending them everywhere.
Yeah.
It's just seriously, one track goes to front of house, one half of the track, the other half goes to our ears. And then here is just, you know, a stereo out, but what I have here are basically two sounds. You can call them three if you want to.
Okay.
One is an amp, just a... You know, like a, just a, with a little bit of a noise gate. So it's just loud distortion, basically.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a 5150, I think like an original PV 5150 kind of an amp in here.
Okay.
With a noise gate and... a cabin, like a, I guess I have like probably a a Celestion kind of a cabinet speaker and a little EQ. And that's this sound, and then that's it. I mean, this is pretty much like, this is my how I start this show. So it's just simple, like, you know, not even that death metal, because I would play Marshalls usually in the studio. Yeah. And it'd just be like hard rock sounds, really, inside of this world. So, and then for here, I've got a little bit of a... little bit of delay. And a little bit, like, just a little bit of, I have the Vermurum, what do you call it? Overdrive.
Oh, right.
Kind of
set
to zero. And that's kind of just a little bit more gain on that. But that's it. I've got a little bit of reverb. Delay for lead stuff. And
do you do any pitch shifting?
I do, but I'll get to that in one second.
Okay. So this one.
So there's a wah that is just like activates. So I have two expression pedals here. I have two little Dunlop expression pedals. One of them is always volume, and one of them is always, this is my, it can be a wah or this can be this. So, like, for the beginning of the theme song. So stuff like that, you know, in the show. So it pokes through, and you can hear it out in the, you know, through the PA and everything. So it's just a, you know, a two octave whammy pedal. So very simple. So it's just a whammy pedal and a wah and distortion and a little bit of EQ, pretty much. Pretty simple.
And for the recording purposes, you got a Rob brought out the head rush so we can kind of hear it, but on stage during the show, it's just through front of house and your guys' ears, so you have no cabs. Do you miss any of that?
No.
You think it? Yeah.
I mean, when I started this whole thing out, I was working in television. I was playing my guitar a lot, and I had to learn how to do all this live stuff. So I was doing it first with a wedge in front of me and a microphone and a guitar. And the feedback loop was endless. And then I got on in-ears pretty quickly, so I did not miss that feedback loop that's just like, just poor front of house, just trying to clasp it and just make it go away. So once I got good in-ears and then I look at this stage and I think this show, again, is not about the people on the stage. You can watch us, you can be engaged in watching Gene Hoagland play drums. It's really cool to watch him. He's an amazing player. And, but really people are focused on what's behind us, you know? So what I need to do is clear that area so that people can see that. Cause sometimes in a venue like this, our screen is really high. And then sometimes when, you know, there's a smaller venue, like in Chicago or the Aragon Ballroom or something like that, we have to like ground stack. So we're like meeting the stage and we don't want, you know, a bunch of amps and cables in a mess, like a rat's nest of things getting in the way. We have a drum kit, and that's something that we're like, that's cool, Gene can be in the drum kit. And we think about that as we're programming and making new video stuff, is there maybe Gene Hoagland at the bottom, so let's put all the dialogue up there if we can. We learned that over years. So so that's the idea. No amps on stage. We make sure we check it before to make sure that the people in the front row can hear us. We have all these wedges in front pointing out all those fills there, so to make sure that they can hear vocals loud and hear the guitars and the bass really loud.
Well, right on, Brendan. I really appreciate your time, but before we go, and Rob's going to be kind and talk to us about the rest of the gear in the band, is what still excites you about guitar? What do you still get energized, and why was it such a fixture of your life?
Well, let me see.
Other than just, you know, being educated and...
Well, I mean, I really
and the art of guitar-y.
The truth is that if I didn't have Metalocalypse, or if I didn't have my, you know, home movies or any of the TV stuff that I got to introduce guitar into, I'd still be playing my guitar at home. I'd still just be hanging out and playing my guitar, because it's a lifelong love affair, really. Mm. And Metalocalypse was like the culmination of me falling back in love with my guitar after getting into comedy and kind of being away from it for a while and starting a new kind of, you know, I was studying music my whole life, and then all of a sudden I started doing stand-up and I got into TV and I said, okay, guitar, I'll see you in a little bit. I don't know where we're going to meet up again. And then somewhere in the early 2000s, because of heavy metal, because of all these great guitar players that were really playing their guitars again after the 90s when they really weren't playing their guitars as much. Mm-hmm. That was all exciting to me, and I was falling in love with my guitar, and that's why Metalocalypse happened, really. That's the real story. So I'm gonna always try to get better than I am. It's fun to try to to record stuff and then try to land it live. I definitely challenge myself in a really great way. Yeah. So it's fun to try to, it's like playing Guitar Hero live, you know? You know? When you nail everything, the audience goes, woo! And if you miss a couple notes, they go, oh, boo.
Start over.
Yeah, start
game over.
Over. Yeah. Game well, over, yeah.
I lied. I got another question, because yeah. I would be remiss if I didn't ask. Is there anything cooking in the works for anything with Death Clock, TV, Metalocalypse?
It's a good question. I get asked that a lot.
People are interested.
Well, I'll say this. You know, keeping this alive and seeing people so excited, and it's so crazy. Our fan base is so engaged. Mm. We have so many creative people that follow the show, so many artists and so many musicians that follow the show, that it's really cool to see them take over the characters and take over the world in their own way. And I love that that's happening. You know, I have one idea, and I've said this, and I'm not really going to say what it is, but mm-hmm. I have one idea that if I could go back and do another small series, I would do it with in this world.
Gotcha.
So maybe, who knows? A lot of that stuff is way out of my control. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, there's something that I think the fans would like and that I would like to do. And that's what this whole thing is. These guys like it and I like doing it. And that's the ultimate cross section, is like my interests and your interests are all meeting right here.
Alignment.
So it's nice. It's a nice feeling. And then I can kind of get out of the way and be a shadow and go back to my life.
I will selfishly root for whatever can arise just so I can see Dr. Roxo again and see him elevate himself.
All to see Dr. Roxo. Well, you'll probably see a few tonight.
Oh, right.
They show up at every show.
Well, Rob, it's your turn.
Hey, Rob.
All right, Brendan, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
Hey, everybody. I'm John Bollinger with Premier Guitar. So, as many of you know, D'Addario has been a longtime friend of PG, sponsoring Rig Rundowns, and they're a longtime friend of all the players with their Players Circle Rewards. I've been using it for years, and essentially, they will reward you for the gear you buy. Open it up, look inside, and there's a reward number. It's free and easy to sign up for. And as soon as you sign up, you immediately get some reward points just for putting your name in. After a while, you accumulate enough where you can buy more of this fantastic D'Addario gear. So as a Players Circle Rewards member, you get discounts on custom products and merch, you get free shipping, and you get a discount on the gear you're buying with your points, or free gear, depending on that. And if you're charitable, you could donate your Players Reward points for musical education. So collect those points, buy the great gear, and let's get back to more rundowns.
All right, we are joined by Rob, who's tech for Nilly and Brandon, but Nilly is unfortunately under the weather, so she's, you know, charging up for the show tonight, but Rob is going to pinch hit and tell us about
right.
her gear. Rob, how you doing?
Yeah, I'm good. Thanks for coming down. Thanks
oh,
for checking
course,
us out.
Of course, man. Tell me about her two shred sticks here.
Yeah, so Nilly mainly plays a new signature model.
That's awesome.
Which debuted at NAMM this year, and will go on general sale, I believe, later this summer.
Okay.
She finally, after years with Ibanez, got her own signature, which is really cool.
Kind of based on the RG that she's...
Yeah, pretty much. Her whole outlook, at least she tells me, is she just wanted an RG fat strat, a really fat super strat kind of deal in RG form. And I think she achieved it really well. I mean, it's great. The model is called The Answer. That's going to be the name of the model that goes on sale. And yeah, it's basswood body, maple neck, exclamation mark.
Yeah, fret inlays. I love that of these inlays.
Yeah, EMG passive pickups, H1 and S1, low pro edge trim, and a super wizard neck. Just a bolt on as well, and it's just plays great.
What strings does she go for?
She's running 11 to 48 Burley Slinky Ernie Ball. And she plays with the 3mm big stubby Jim Dunlop picks.
Wow, which is the complete opposite of what Brendan's using.
Yeah, exactly. I've got one right here. Yeah, there you go. So,
wow.
It's like a dinner plate.
It's like a shingle.
Yeah, it's insane. It's insane. And it's like the bass on the Ibanez Premier. It's right there on the headstock, you can see. And yeah, it's a great, solid guitar. It plays really well, stays in tune well. I mean, Nilly's a complete shredder as well.
Yeah, so she's versatile, and she could play a broom and make it sound good, but
yeah,
man.
She's wild. Like, the stuff that she does with Danny Elfman and everything like that.
Yeah, and Cirque Soleil.
Yeah, it's incredible. She's an incredible player. So yeah, so this guitar really suits her. And these glow in the dark as well, these pickups, which is super awesome.
Yeah.
So.
Well, good for her, because I know that's been a long friendship between her and Ibanez, and for her to get recognized like that's cool.
Yeah, she was so stunned when she finally got hold of this. Like, the unboxing video is super cool to see. Yeah. And like, yeah, she was at NAMM this year, and you couldn't wipe the smile off her face. So yeah, it was really, really cool. So yeah, it's a great guitar, and the backup is just...
So that, would you say, all things go well, that is get used all night?
All night. She will only use this if she breaks a string, which, touch wood, has never happened. I mean, it will tonight. Now I'm talking about
it. Way to go, Rob.
There you go. And this is just standard RG5170, I believe, prestige model. Again, 24 frets, bolt on neck. This one does have active pickups.
Oh, all right.
The EMG active is in there.
Oh, I think the Marty's. I believe so,
yeah. And again, the variation on the low pro edge trim, I don't know the exact model in this one, but it's just super stable, plays really great, but she will only go to this if she breaks a string. But it's a really, really solid backup.
And then what is this little devil down here?
So this little head rush unit. So normally with Death Clock, we have some kind of a backline. And Nilly has been a Mesa Boogie artist for a number of years. So we will usually have a 2x12 cabinet with some kind of boogie head. But because Brendan wanted to emphasize the video screen really on this run a lot, we've gone with just modelers now, and Nilly's got to deal with head rush. So she just brought out this little Flex Prime unit, and it's great for what we need it for. It's awesome. Like, just two sounds, just a rhythm and a lead, and that's it. It's just
party time.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, a guitarist of Nilly's caliber, she doesn't need a huge tonal palette.
Yeah.
You know, she can make anything sound great.
Yeah, it's all in the hands.
That's just it, yeah. And it's C-standard tuning, just a really, really dirty, overdriven sound, and it sounds killer. Sounds killer for what we need.
Well, Rob, I appreciate your time. I know you guys were up against it for sound check, but I think we're going to get lucky and get Pete, right?
I believe so, yeah. I've seen him lurking in the shadows somewhere over there, so yeah, you'll get Mr. Pete Griffin, the Grammy-winning Pete Griffin.
Hell yeah. All right, let's talk to Pete.
All right.
All right, last but not least, we are joined by Pete. Pete, how you doing?
Oh, great. Really good.
Glad you're here.
Me too.
And I'm glad that you're able to make time for us, man.
Yeah, no problem. A pleasure.
We're up against sound check, but we got to include the bass player.
Yes.
We're often neglected the bass player, but not by choice. Today
even,
we got
even
you.
In metal, yeah. We're
you're included. You've not been summed down to a track.
Yes,
you were still here.
Yep.
So tell me about your bass.
This is the Dingwall D-Rock Standard. It works so well for this kind of stuff because we're in C standard tuning, so
okay.
C, F, B flat, E flat. And it just feels normal. I use the Dunlop 55, so heavy gauge, I think is what they're called.
All right.
Stainless. And it just makes it, rather than tuning an E way down to C, it's like, it's a C string, basically. Like, it really just feels normal and everything, and like really holds that low tuning really well.
God, it sounds good.
Yeah. And that's all three pickups, wide open, you know.
Is that kind of where you ride all night?
Yeah. Yeah, I hardly ever change. And then I just use this Dunnable. For one, and I love that bass too. But
I love
this
Sasha.
One, yeah, he's a good friend of mine. It's been really cool. Actually, the other band, Castle Rat, that is playing with, their bass player and their guitar player are Dunnables. So it's like well represented. Yeah.
Good.
But that one for the Duncan Hills coffee song, the C is tuned up to D because that one they're in D for it. So it was easier for me to match that. I love this thing, and the whole fan fret thing. People are like, oh, doesn't that confuse you? Once you get used to it, it's real easy.
Yeah.
You know, like it's except up here. Occasionally you can get a little confused, but you know.
What pick do you use?
I've had my my custom ones from Dunlop forever of Ultex 1mm, and then I just to try it out, got Flow ones.
All right.
That are a little bit heavier, like 1.14, and it's got the little logo grippiness on it, and I kind of like it because it stops it from doing that like side turn that it'll occasionally do. It's kind of locked in place a little better and has like a really bright attack to it. Yeah.
Now, and you were saying before we started rolling that this is your first tour without a backline.
Yeah, without an amp behind me.
Yeah, so you got a quad cortex and a couple other things down there. Tell me
about it. Yeah. I was told I could not bring my beloved Ashdown amps on this run, so I have a model of that in there. The main distortion you're hearing is this prototype that I'm not really allowed to talk about, but
it's a nondescript gray box.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. But it's a distortion. It's going to be amazing when it comes out. That's that main kind of dirt.
Okay.
I try to not get too distorted because there's so much other distortion. You'll kind of lose.
What's going on here?
Yeah. I kind of lose the fundamental and all of that. And then I have the amp model in there and another couple little tweaks and stuff, like occasional other distortion and octave. But then. And I've been looking for this for years. I finally figured out a way so that when they're doing a dual lead, I can be a rhythm guitar player too. So I add this upper octave that we won't hear through here. But so it's almost like an 8-string bass kind of thing.
And that's that finally?
This is all, it's just a completely separate line.
Got it.
That's just the upper octave through a guitar amp. And like a little bit of reverb to give it some reality. And then the Justin Chancellor wah, which is so fun.
So awesome.
Yeah, they knocked it out of the park with that. And then finally, the the sushi box finally thing. It's basically just a tube in a box.
Ooh, that I love that name.
You can
sushi box,
they make amazing stuff, and it's all very similar, like tube in a box kind of thing. So once I started using that, my ears were like, yeah, there's an amp there, like, because you're hitting a tube and it's squishing just enough and all that. So yeah, I've been super duper happy, and our front of house guy's super happy, and what's extra awesome is he's a bass player, so I know I'm a little bit more represented out there.
Well, Pete, thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, of course, man.
Frankie's gonna kill me, but we're done with this rundown. You guys rule. Keep watching.
Thanks.